The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Grant Elliott, founder and CEO of a company called Ostendio. Grant, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks, John.
Well, first of all, we're going to try to explain this accent, then we're going to explain the name of the company and the radio here. Some things, you know, you're driving your car, you hear something, Ostendio, is it an A, an O? So it's Ostendio, O-S-T-E-N-D-I-O is the name of the company. And Grant, tell us about your background and this crazy accent, South Africa, Australia. Where are you from anyway?
Well, not quite as far afield as that. It's just Scotland. Although I've, you know, not lived there for a long period of time, which is probably showing my age. I grew up in a little town called Paisley, just outside of Glasgow. Probably left there in my sort of, you know, when I was just turned about 20. I lived in London for a number of years, and then I've been in the US for, I guess, close to 20.
Long time. And you're the owner of a startup called Ostendio, O-S-T-E-N-D-O. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So Ostendio is actually from the Latin ostendi, which means to demonstrate or to show, and that kind of fits in well with kind of what we do, which is to help organizations manage, but more importantly, demonstrate they're operating an effective cybersecurity program.
And that's why I wanted you to have in the studio to give you a different perspective, give my audience a perspective, a different angle on this whole thing called HIPAA, H-I-P-A-A. I mean, I think my listeners have been bombarded with it. Every time they go to the dentist, they go to the doctor, they have these HIPAA signs and warnings, and they're concerned about it. And I thought we'd bring you in, and we can talk about your company and how you can help our listeners, and how you're involved in the federal government with a strange branch called the Office of Civil Rights, OCR. I mean, I would never have guessed that HIPAA's got anything to do with the Office of Civil Rights, does it?
Well, it's always interesting how these things come, because I think when you set out, or when, you know, decisions are made, you know, over a period of 20, 30 years, you kind of evolve into kind of strange situations. And, you know, the way that, you know, HIPAA itself has evolved, and the fact that it's actually managed by the Office of Civil Rights, is really just an accident of evolution over the course of the last 20 years.
So it's HHS, Office of Civil Rights, administers a HIPAA program. That's the problem.
That's correct. Yeah. And again, specifically, and what people, you know, should be aware is that, you know, it's only specific data sets. So obviously healthcare information, but only healthcare information that's specifically managed by, for example, hospitals, you know, health plans, etc., what they call covered entities. And then any organization that's acting as a supplier for them has access to sensitive data. So it's interesting. A lot of people think that HIPAA covers all sensitive health information, but it's actually a very specific subset.
Covered entities, my. Whenever I get in these HIPAA discussions, I have to get up my pen and write down these very specific words, which in your world mean really, really targeted specific things. In my world, covered entity, it could be a couch, it could be a covered entity. That's the data set we're talking about.
Well, I think whenever you set or you start out to write a set of new regulations, I think, you know, most people that do that, they want to invent a few words so that they can have their name stamp actually on it. And that really is the hardest thing. And, you know, I'm one of these few, certainly a sad person who has actually read the entire, you know, set of HIPAA federal regulations from end to end, which is not an easy thing to do because it's full of links to various different things. And you realize that, and you can understand, you know, if you've developed product and you've built very specific workflows, you know, words very often can have multiple meanings. And, you know, we have the same challenge within our organization, which is you have to create specific definitions of specific meanings of words that are going to mean the same to everyone, even if they might have different literal meanings in the outside world. And, you know, developing regulations is no different. So they have to create these terms so that people understand specifically what that definition of a term means.
So what we know in the last 15, 20 years has been a big change in the healthcare system. We all know that. People are worried about protecting their data. We know that. And there's been a transition to portable data. And I think if you try to look at this from 40,000 feet, you go, okay, people want to be able to send information back and forth, and how can they send it securely? And this is, I guess, the general business problem that HIPAA addresses. Is that right? The portable?
Yeah. Well, so let's go back to the beginning of why HIPAA began. So, I mean, HIPAA really was developed. I mean, it talks about portability of information, because originally when you know, someone would move from one side of the country to another side of the country, and they would go to a new doctor and they say, you know, hey, I've got whatever ailment, and the doctor would ask, well, do you have any records? And they would basically say, yeah, it was back in my doctor, wherever it came from, Idaho or wherever. And they would try and get hold of those records. And there was no requirement at that time for your previous doctor to send that information to your new doctor. So they basically create HIPAA 1, which was, again, a mandate that people had to send this information. But what happened was then these doctors just started getting big boxes of information and shipping them anywhere, and that information was going astray and getting missing. So it was made sense that they started to build some security and privacy requirements into that, which is basically HIPAA 2. And a lot of the foundation there at that time, information was becoming digitized. So a lot of the focus is on electronic information. But that's really kind of how it evolved. It started out as, you know, the portability of the information, then evolved into the security of the information.
So 1996, HIPAA, and then like Rambo 1, Rambo 2. So HIPAA 2 a few years later. And then they had a big jump around 2012, 2013 with something new. Is that right?
Yeah. And people don't really get, I think, the significance of what happened in 2013 with the American Recovery Act as part of high tech, as it was called. Because for, you know, most covered entities, most hospital health plans, things didn't change that much. But prior to that point, if you were a supplier to a hospital or a health plan, your obligation for protecting data was dictated by whatever contract you signed from the hospital or the health plan. You know, they would make you sign a contract, which is called a business associate agreement. And within that, it specified particular things that you had to do as an organization. But, you know, if your customer didn't make you sign that agreement, you know, or even if they did make you sign that agreement, you were only commercially liable to the hospital health plan. You weren't federally liable. When they made the change in 2013, they actually basically said, no, it doesn't matter whether you have an agreement in place or not. If you're operating as a business associate, then you are federally liable to HIPAA now. And that's a big change, because instead of now worrying about whether, you know, your customer is going to sue you, now you're really on the hook for the government, who can come in and take action against you as well.
That gets scary, doesn't it? So when did your company start, and what business problems do you solve in reference to HIPAA?
Sure. So again, my background, I spent prior to building Astendio, I was the chief operations officer and chief information security officer of a digital health company here in DC. It was called Voxiva. They've just changed their name as part of a corporate restructure to WellPass. And during that time, I spent a huge amount of internal organizational time building and maintaining our information security program. Not only that, I had to spend a lot of time with lots of health organizations, you know, payers, providers, etc., trying to demonstrate to them that we had a really effective information security program in place. And it just seemed to me that that was a very inefficient process. This are, you know, organizations out there that were to help. There were law firms that charge a lot of money to help you build and develop policies. There were security firms that would help you do gap analysis and risk assessments. But operationally, day to day, there didn't seem to be any tool out there that managed that process for you. What I was really looking for was like a Salesforce type tool, but for managing security. So as I talked to a number of people in the industry that I knew, and I kind of asked them if they were having the same challenges, you know, all of them said they were. And I can ask them if there was a solution that managed this for them in a simpler way, would they be interested? You know, there was kind of, you know, unqualified sort of like agreement that would be the case.
I'm putting the pieces of the puzzle together. So it's a workflow management solution that demonstrates compliance with HIPAA. Is that the...
Yeah.
That's Astendio, demonstrates compliance.
Absolutely. So it does basically three things. It creates a pathway for any organization to understand what they need to do to be in alignment with a number of standards and regulations. So it can be federal regulations like HIPAA, it can be security standards like ISO 27001, it can be, again, you know, financial or sort of like operational solutions like SOC 2. So again, we build the pathway so that if you don't know as an organization what to do, our solution will basically guide you through those steps. Secondly, it allows you to operationally manage all those activities. So what people don't realize is that, you know, when you implement a policy to do something, you actually have to do it. And so, you know, being compliant is not necessarily just having a policy that's downloadable somewhere. It's about making sure that as an organization, you're operationalizing that. So if that's doing data access audits, if it's patching servers, whatever, you have to do all those things. And then finally, as you mentioned, because the platform itself controls the organization to make sure they're doing all these things, we're inherently collecting all that data so that when it comes time for you to have to demonstrate to an auditor or a customer or any other stakeholder that you're doing all these things, you can simply just run reports from the platform.
Instead of doing this crazy spreadsheet madness and making mistakes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, a customer of ours described this one time before they used our solution. He said, you know, he was actually the former, I think, CTO of MySpace. And, you know, we talked to him about, you know, how he did it previously. And he said, we did it with a lot of spreadsheets and screaming.
That comes together. Well, it's good. Let's end on that note, come back and talk about cybersecurity threats and talk about your product, MyVCM. Is that your product?
That's correct, yes.
We'll talk about that when we get back. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Grant Elliott, founder and CEO of a company called Ostendio. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We have Grant Elliott in the studio, founder and CEO of a company called Ostendio Incorporated. You can go over his website, Ostendio. Very nice website, a lot of blogs, a lot of interaction. You can read. In fact, I read three blogs this morning, all kinds of interesting information. He also puts a lot of information on LinkedIn. So if you want to find out about Ostendio, no problem at all. You can get all kinds of information on that. What they do is they help organizations with HIPAA compliance, help my listeners with HIPAA compliance because the federal government's involved with many aspects of HIPAA. And before the break, we mentioned some funny little product called My V as in Victor, C as in Charlie, M as in Mary. MyVCM. So what is that and how can that help my listeners?
Sure. So MyVCM is a platform, again, as I was saying before the break, so I think of it as a kind of Salesforce for cybersecurity. The whole objective of the platform is to give you a SaaS-based environment or a cloud-based environment that helps an organization manage all aspects of the security program. Traditionally, organizations tend to do that through a combination of spreadsheets, through ticket management systems. But fundamentally, in order to run an effective cybersecurity program, you have to have good documentation, good version management of that documentation, so you know what versions have been distributed to staff. You want to be able to track that they've signed off in that documentation. You want to make sure that you have effective training routinely and against and mapped against specific standards and regulations. Good inventory management. Again, the core of understanding effective security is you need to be able to understand what data do you have, where is that data, who's accessing it, what they're doing with it, and how are you protecting it. So our platform helps you build and track all that information as well. Managing your vendors, a significant portion of security is breached through vendor management, so we help them manage, track their vendor information as well. So the platform really covers all the different workflow elements of operating a cybersecurity program and a single platform, so that gives management, executive team, the board, a single pane of glass view across the entire enterprise for all aspects of the cybersecurity program.
Well, I listen to your voice and I know you're not from Baltimore. I know you're from Scotland. But up in Baltimore, there's an association called ABET. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they accredit engineering schools. So they go up to Virginia Tech and they do an evaluation and they say, yes, Virginia Tech, you comply with the regulations for teaching engineering and you have calculus and differential equations and we're going to credit you to teach it. And then you accredited schools can get funding from the federal government and it reassures their students. So in the world of accreditation, there's a set of standards. And so who accredits an organization or product for HIPAA compliance? I mean, are there violations or is there an association? Are there rules? I mean, how does that process even take place?
So there's a set of federal regulations, that take into account multiple different parts of HIPAA. There's the security rule, privacy rule, breach notification rule, and a few others. And they're really, for the most part, a set of general guidelines that outline. And, you have to go back to, as we talked earlier on, about why did HIPAA come in. And the idea really was to try and make sure that organizations did something to build an effective security program. Some of the criticisms of HIPAA generally are that those specific regulations are very broad. And so there's a lot of potential interpretation, how you apply it. The Office of Civil Rights, as we mentioned, who actually enforce HIPAA, are not an audit organization per se. They're not going to provide a certification. So in order to get some sort of external certification against the regulations, you're really having to go to a third party organization who are not authorized to do this per se, but if they're a creditable audit organization, you can go by the letterhead and they'll do their interpretation of how the regulation should be applied. Probably better though, rather than to rely on a set of generic regulations, is to focus on maybe a standards institute, for example, the ISO 27001, or go through a SOC 2, or increasingly in the healthcare space, there's an organization called HITRUST that's tried to provide a much more granular way of managing health regulation as well. So there's lots of different ways to do it. My recommendation is just do something, yeah. Because there's lots of organizations out there that really aren't doing even the basics.
Is there an organization in Reston called WITA, W-I-T-A or W-I-T-A or something? I know there's...
Yeah, so again, I also separately run a not-for-profit called the Healthcare Cloud Coalition. Uh-huh. And we partner with organizations like HIMSS. You know, we've had OCR and various other organizations present, and we partner with those guys as well.
That's what they're
Again, they're specifically just trying to help provide clarity and standard-based security, because again, there is a lot of confusion over this. There's 100 ways to basically secure an organization. There was something like $80 billion spent last year on cybersecurity tools. There's forecast to be about $1 trillion spent over the next 5 years. So there's no shortage of things that organizations can be do. I think the challenge for most organizations, that can become a little bit intimidating. So really understanding the kind of ABC of what they need to get done really is kind of where we help focus the organizations, get them started along a journey so that they can at least build the basics and then build foundationally on top of that as well.
Earlier in the show, you talked about a covered entity, and I tried to make a bad joke about covered couch or something and wrote down covered entity. And then it dawned on me, you know, there are devices in hospitals now that are categories under IoT, Internet of Things, and they collecting data on you. So you go to a hospital, it collects data on you, and those devices can be compromised. Are those included under HIPAA, or is that a covered entity?
So it's a great question, right? So in many cases, no, right? I mean, again, the issue around HIPAA is not about necessarily specifically what data you have. You know, protected health information is classified as any identifiable information that's related to the treatment and care of an individual, but that must be managed by a care organization. So, for example, if you have some sort of mobile application and you're collecting sensitive health information from your users, because you're not providing care, none of that information is protected under HIPAA. And this is, again, one of the big sort of misconceptions people have. They think that HIPAA covers everything. And that's why, you know, we push back a lot. Whenever any of our clients come say, we want to be HIPAA compliant, we want to focus on HIPAA, we actually specifically steer them away there, because I think HIPAA is one of these regulations that's got an outsized reputation. People believe it does a lot more than it actually does, that it's got a lot more clarity than it actually does. And actually, in many ways, sometimes we believe that the focus on HIPAA can actually be distracting, and the organizations that just focus on HIPAA end up becoming less secure than organizations that focus on implementing a common sense cybersecurity framework that they can map and align to HIPAA, because that's going to allow them to be more comprehensive. I mean, you know, you want to protect all your data, not just specific parts of it.
There's a phrase I use around my house with my kids, unintended consequences, you know, and you know, when you raise kids, there's a lot of unintended consequences, broken windows and things. And I think if you look at the hospital community and healthcare IT, HIMSS, big organizations, I think HIPAA is a good step in the right direction of protecting users against cyber attacks, but it's just a step in the right direction. I mean, everyone's going after hospitals now for cybersecurity, and so you have to figure out a way that you can prevent yourself from being attacked, and this process you have is a good starting point to protect against cyber attacks, isn't it?
Well, again, it's a starting point. I mean, that's what I would say. It should never be the your end game. And you know, and cybersecurity and building an effective security program is always a journey. You're always improving. You know, we like to use the health analogy that, you know, this is not about, you know, going on a diet for a certain period of time and achieving a specific weight goal. This is about a sustainable change in behavior that's going to allow you to sort of like maintain a particular posture, a particular fitness level. And, you know, too often we talk to organizations that, A, you know, again, they think this is episodic, which is, I just need to do this for a period of time and then I'm done. But we have to, you know, educate them that's not the case. And then the second thing is, you know, one of the biggest mistakes we see that a lot of executives make is they think it's something they can outsource. And the analogy I like to use, maintaining the health analogy, is a bit like going to a fitness instructor and asking them to help you with your exercise regime and then expecting them to do the push-ups for you.
Right? And the reality
is, yeah. And the reality is that, you know, when you talk to the executive or you talk to any organization, you know, it's about everyone within the organization. We really focus our platform on making sure every single person within the organization is contributing, because they are the first line of defense. And when you talk to, whether it be a CTO, a CIO, a CEO, or anyone within an organization, the moment they answer my question with, I have someone that deals with that for me, then you know that they don't have a sustainable cybersecurity program within their organization.
I went to your Twitter feed this morning, at OSTENDIO, and you talked a lot about ransomware and all kinds of tweets about ransomware. So what is ransomware, and how does it affect my listeners and people in hospitals?
So it's really interesting, because I think for me, ransomware is a game changer, not just specifically how ransomware operates, but basically how it gets infected. So I think, you know, look, prior to the last couple of years, if you were a major health system or you were an organization, Very often, a lot of the strategy these organizations say, if I stay under the radar, if I'm a smaller enough company, they're not going to come and get me. You have this whole protection of the herd mentality. Or if you're a major, you know, multi-billion dollar health system, I mean, look, what's the worst that's going to happen, right? You know, if you're a, let's say, a $7-8 billion health system and you get some form of breach, it's not like a commercial organization where you think patients are going to stay away. Even the fines, if you know, if you look at the OCR judgments that have been given out, you know, sort of like 10 million, 50 million, 200 million, again, they're not really prohibitive in terms of fundamentally changing the investment structure that a health system should need to do. And so from our perspective, ransomware kind of changes that dynamic.
We have to take a break, get some messages in here, and come back, talk more about ransomware and how you can help our listeners protect themselves against this this threat. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Grant Elliott, founder and CEO of a company called Ostendio. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Grant Elliott, founder and CEO of a company called Ostendio, O-S-T-E-N-D-I-O. They're right over here in Arlington, and they work with HIPAA compliance. And before the break, we were talking about ransomware and healthcare IT, and I tossed up this thing called Anthem. So tell us about Anthem and the breach, and what do these really mean to our listeners, these breaches?
Well, so again, one of the challenges. So we started talking about ransomware before the break, and you know, to me, that fundamentally changes the game because prior to you know, the last couple of years, and not only does a ransomware breach impact the operation ability of an organization. So you know, if you look at the MedStar breach that happened last year, that as an organization probably still recovering today from that in the sense that their entire systems were down. As they started to treat and care for patients, they weren't able to do that through their systems. So you can imagine that as that stuff eventually filters its way through to the insurance companies are basically saying, well, you know, that claim wasn't submitted the right way. We're not doing that. So all of a sudden, I think ransomware from an impact perspective has started to significantly increase the focus of security for the executives within those organizations. Because you compare that to Anthem, 80 million records breached, you know, are people really even aware of whether they were one of those records? I know that I got a letter through and I didn't even know that Anthem at that time was involved in my care in any shape or form. So has there really been any negative impact to Anthem on having, you know, basically the largest healthcare breach that's been in history? And it's hard to imagine that there really, really is. And even the OCR investigation into that is not complete yet. So we don't even know whether they're going to even be found culpable of any sort of wrongdoing or misdoing.
Not done yet?
Not done yet, right?
Wow.
And so, but ransomware is immediate, right? Ransomware is an immediate impact on the organization. It immediately debilitates the organization. The other thing that, again, you know, and this goes to what I mentioned earlier on about this, you know, the protection of the herd. How does ransomware occur? Again, it typically, there's lots of organizations now, whether they be in far off flung places, I'm not going to mention countries, but they're literally scanning the network for vulnerabilities now. They're not targeting necessarily a particular organization or a particular department. They're literally scanning for vulnerabilities. So the reason that ransomware becomes more effective, and you know, if you look at the recent WannaCry effect, is because they're just randomly picking vulnerabilities and identifying vulnerabilities and flaws. So it's not about whether you're a 5-person organization or a 500,000 person organization. It's not necessarily whether you have valuable data or whether you don't have valuable data. They're targeting you based on the vulnerability you have in your network. And all of a sudden that becomes the problem. So you can no longer just say, hey, I'm small. I don't have a lot of sensitive data. Therefore, I'm safe. Ransomware changes that calculus.
So the bad guy goes down the street and tries every single door in the street until he finds a door that's open or unlocked.
And he doesn't care necessarily what's behind that door. That's not what he's trying. He's not you know, being that selective. He's just looking for open doors.
We had a guest in the studio, a guy named Navroop Mitter, and he has a company called Armortext, and he encrypts messages. So where does message encryption fit in this whole picture of HIPAA?
Well, I think look, any ability to basically protect data. So, you know, there's really only two ways that data is accessible. I mean, either in storage, so it's, you know, within a server, it's within a laptop, it's, you know, physically resident somewhere. And in that situation, you know, people obviously have to get into that environment in order to access the data. Or as you transmit the data, as you send that message from, you know, point A to point B. Now, data isn't inherently valuable when it's sitting resident somewhere. It has to be transmitted, whether it's internally or externally. So, you know, the interesting thing about, if you look at the HIPAA regulation specifically, Many people have this misconception that encrypting data is actually a mandatory requirement of HIPAA. It's actually an addressable requirement, both in transit and in storage. Now, that said, what does addressable mean? Addressable doesn't mean it's optional. Right? Addressable basically means that if you have an alternative or equivalent way of protecting the data that you can demonstrate does a sufficient job, then you're allowed to use that. To be perfectly honest, today, with the tools and techniques that are available, anyone who's not encrypting data on a laptop or not encrypting data in a server, it's really been foolhardy because it's never been easy. Microsoft even just provide that capability now for any laptop that they ship with Windows 10. And then encrypting data from a transit is obviously a much harder issue, which is why companies like Naroops exist, because trying to make sure that you're protecting the data so that both the sender and the recipient can unencrypt it at point is obviously a key challenge.
I went to your LinkedIn profile, and in December of 2016, you wrote an article called Five Predictions for Healthcare Cybersecurity for 2017. And I read them all, and I said to myself, How does he keep up with all this stuff? I couldn't keep up with one paragraph in there. I mean, you're talking about GRC and OCI and RegTech and cyber. I mean, so what do you read to keep up? I mean, how do you keep your head above water with all these changes and regulations and ACA change? And how do you keep up? What do you read?
Well, look, we have a number of customers and obviously prospective organizations we talk to. So I spend a lot of time talking to them.
So you got smart customers. That's smart customers.
And then obviously we as an organization, have to be seen as subject matter leaders in this space. So we do a lot of research because as you correctly indicated, putting content out there. So as you create a new content piece, you're basically researching a little bit more for that content piece. But I also, as I mentioned before, run a separate organization called the Healthcare Cloud Coalition. And through that organization, we're funded by organizations like Microsoft and Apple. And we invite, industry experts onto that to basically, so we've had recent presentations on GDPR, we've had the Office of Civil Rights present, we've had Bikul Patel from the FDA on presenting at that, we had the HITRUST leadership team on presenting as well. So, again, by making sure that you're having continual conversations with those that are involved in helping, shaping and distributing these regulations and standards, and having just good conversations, that kind of helps you kind of, form and develop an opinion on these things.
Any blogs you read? Any books you recommend for our listeners to keep up?
Yeah, so again, Dark Reading is a great cybersecurity blog. If people haven't subscribed to Dark Reading, they should do. We were lucky enough to actually have them publish one of our blog posts as well recently as well. But generally, just doing Google searches, you're going to find lots of really interesting things. Find the topic, if it's encryption, if it's regulation, if it's ransomware, and you're going to find that Google does a good job of indexing this stuff. And as you sift through, you're going to find lots of good articles. Obviously, lots of people in my network and LinkedIn, as you point out, I'm a member of a number of groups there. They share some really interesting articles. We have a number of partners that we work with, again, who are always coming up and sharing new information. So yeah, LinkedIn is a great way to sort of join some of those groups as well.
My world is social media marketing, and I'm intensely involved in it. And if I typed in how to podcast, I could get 10,000 answers and maybe 90% of junk. And so I don't know. I mean, I could spend all day long reading bad stuff. It would be like me writing an article about how to do ballet. And people throw themselves in, the self-proclaimed experts. And so what I do is I go on Twitter and I follow someone like you, like Ostendio, and go, look, this guy's done it for 20 years. He's been beat up and knocked around, and he knows what the good articles are. And so I think that's what I would do if I was interested in HIPAA and encryption and healthcare IT and this whole idea of compliance. I would follow someone like you, because you follow someone like you who's filtered out the bad stuff and says, no, all this is junk. This is the 5% worth reading, and maybe a Dark Reading article is something worth reading.
So I think it's an interesting perspective, but if you were to follow that point, so like, if I was to take everything that I read for granted as being the way that I thought the world was supposed to be, I would never have set up a business, right? I mean, clearly the whole reason we set up Ostendio is because we looked at the market and we believed that we wanted to do things differently and in a different way, because we thought there was a gap in the market. And so there are certain areas, I mentioned earlier on, there's, $80 billion spent last year in cybersecurity, $1 trillion forecast to be spent. Our perspective on that is there's lots of really great things. So if you mentioned about Naroop, you had Virtual Security on here earlier on. There are some great products being developed today, and they all do fantastic things. But our perspective is that, you know, if you're a CIO, if you're a, the CTO or the Chief Information Security Officer of an organization today, there are too many tools for you to manage.
Right, exactly. There's too many.
And so what I call this the Fortune 1000 issue, right? So these organizations, if you're a Fortune 1000 organization, if you're the federal government, if you're at the point where you're dealing with things at the margins and you're trying to get that extra level of encryption, or you're trying to, you know, really try and identify and do some network sniffing, these tools are great. But for 90% of the rest of the organizations out there, right, they're not going to spend tens of thousands of dollars on a sophisticated cybersecurity device that solves one particular problem, right? That's like, you know, focusing on a hugely expensive burglar alarm system, but not really, you know, focusing on closing your doors. So what we focus on doing is basically trying to help those organizations understand what are the basic building blocks they need to put in place, and then how can they manage their organization and manage their team to make sure they're doing this, right? And another analogy I like to give is, you know, you don't invest, you know, thousands of dollars in a cybersecurity, burglar alarm system, and then don't train your kids how to switch it on.
That makes sense. Let's take a break, come back. We'll talk more about technical solutions versus more common sense solutions and how your platform fits in, and maybe talk about the future of technology and the HIPAA itself. This is Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest today is Grant Elliott, founder and CEO of Ostendio.
Could coral reefs be saved by a pipeline? That's the dream of an engineer with an innovative idea to address the effects of climate change. As ocean surface waters warm, coral reefs can bleach and even die, turning white as colorful algae that serve as their primary food source leave. So Mo Asani, an Arizona civil engineer, is designing special pipes that could pump cold water from deep in the ocean and cool the coral above.
We have a joint-free pipe. That's really ideal because you could have a 2 or 3 mile long if that's what is needed.
Asani says the system wouldn't need electricity.
We would simply use the wave action to move the lever inside of that pump up and down and force the water up the pipe.
While more research is needed, both in terms of the engineering and the ecosystem effects, it's one of very few ideas for addressing the growing coral bleaching problem. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM in the studio. Grant Elliott, founder and CEO of Ostendio, O-S-T-E-N-D-I-O. It's a platform that helps you with workflow involving compliance. And we've just beat up on HIPAA for the last 40 minutes, but way much more than HIPAA you handle, isn't it?
Yeah. So again, you know, as we mentioned earlier on, you know, HIPAA is a very specific set of data. And so, you know, my perspective to our clients is, why would you put so much effort for just a minimal component of your information? So, you know, one of the first things we work with our customers on is helping them do data classification and classify the data into different buckets, from secret, confidential, internal use only, sort of like public sort of PR data as well. But more importantly, you know, if you're an organization and you're maintaining credit card information, then you have to take into account PCI compliance. If you're working for the government, then maybe you've got to take into account FedRAMP, FISMA. There's a number of different standards and regulations. And when you look at what many of these requirements are, you know, probably 80 to 90% of the activity you have to perform is similar and aligned. So why spend all this time doing it and mapping it to just one specific regulation when you can actually, for the same level of effort, map it to multiple ones as well? So our platform is, you know, regulation and standard agnostic. We have customers, many of our customers are in healthcare, so HIPAA applies, but we have a number of customers outside of healthcare as well. And they're using it for, you know, GDPR, they're using it for maybe local country regulations because we have customers outside the US as well, or they're using it again specifically for various different federal regulations as well.
So that's why when you go to your website, you see the whole long list of stuff there. There's FedRAMP, there's HIPAA, blah, 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 all kinds of lists there, because many times they're interested in the same type of secure applications. So let's go back to your article. You wrote an article in LinkedIn back in December, talked about, you know, the 5 predictions for healthcare cybersecurity. First one is that larger cybersecurity budgets, so people can spend more money into this, have to spend it effectively, don't they?
Yeah, and we're definitely seeing that. You know, I've mentioned before what the forecast prediction actually is going to be. The question really is, as you said, as we talked about earlier, what are they going to spend it in, right? If they're just going to spend that money on a bigger, shinier tool, You know, at the end of the day, security is about the lowest common denominator. You have to really more effectively. And one of the most effective tools today is like things like phishing training, right? You know, if you're an organization, phishing training has never been cheaper. There's lots of organizations that do it right now. And for those that don't understand, phishing is where organizations send emails that look like they're coming from your bank or some third party, or more commonly from a friend or something that contains a link that you click on and it opens an executable or sends out subsequent emails to your contact list, etc. And once you've clicked on that link, then you're potentially exposing a vulnerability. Phishing training basically simulates that process, and then through an organization will send campaigns with various different types of things that might come from some sort of simulation, and they can then track safely whether people are clicking on these links. And they call people that continually click on these links clickers. And you will have someone within your organization that clicks on every single thing that's put in front of them. So this gives you an opportunity to retrain them.
Mm-hmm. So this isn't really sophisticated knowledge of encryption and AES 256. Now, this is really just human behavior. It's almost like human behavior more than details of HTML coding, huh?
Well, look, as I mentioned earlier on, like if you're working for a major bank or you're working for the government, then you are having to protect yourself against sophisticated cyber attacks. But for most organizations, what they're trying to protect against is basically losing a laptop that's unencrypted that has information on it, or clicking on a phishing link that basically exposes password hacks, etc. If you look at some of the most common breaches that are occurring today, they're not a result of someone going in and hacking into a specifically secure data center. They really are a result of someone clicking on a phishing link, or someone exposing password information, or just misconfiguring something. So making sure that your employees understand their role, their responsibility, making sure that you have appropriate segmentation and what employees have what information. There are a number of basic things that you can do that will have an 80 to 9% impact on the risk of your organization, and you don't have to spend a lot of money doing it.
For example, a password manager, is that what you suggest?
Well, password managers are a difficult one because, again, I certainly use one. I use a locally installed one. But, organizations like LastPass, they've had a breach recently. So cloud-based solutions, they're only going to be secure as, obviously, the provider of that solution. But there's no doubt that, not using the same password on all your different systems is a good idea. If you look at every year they do a study of the most commonly used passwords, and 12345 is still the number one password that's used most commonly. Number two in that list is 123456. So people are not, using it. And this kind of comes into I talk about a lot of what do organizations and what do people need to do to be more secure? And, in a lot of the panels that I'm on, there's a lot of focus on new tools, new technologies, new ways of doing things. And fundamentally, I don't believe that that's a solution, right? To me, most people know they need to do more. If you just look at people in their personal life and you ask people, they're aware of the threats, they're aware of the vulnerabilities. But if you ask them if they're using, secure enough passwords, if you ask them if they're doing enough in their own personal life, most of them will privately admit that they're probably not doing enough. But they're not willing to invest more time to do it. It's the same with businesses. Most of them privately will admit they're not doing it near enough. They know they can do more. So the issue that we have, I think, around is not really that there are not enough tools in the marketplace to help them do it. There's not enough motivation within the workforce to actually do it properly. So the key thing is, how do we make people more motivated to do more of those basics?
So the all kinds of numbers on phishing attacks, P-H-I-S-I, phishing attacks. And one is that 74% of people click on a phishing link. That seems like a big number, doesn't it? I've read that. That seems high.
And that number is actually based, even when you almost 80% of the people in that study knew the danger of phishing links, but they still click on the link. And if you actually look at some of the exploits that have happened recently, they're really not that clever. I mean, I would like to think as a somewhat smart individual, that if we were going to create our own phishing campaign, we could do a better job than most of the ones that people fall for. But yeah, you'll be amazed at how often people will just basically see a quick email from someone. It might be two lines. It's not even that well presented, and they'll just click on it before they think on it. There was a CIO of a health system was telling me a story recently that they actually ran a phishing seminar. And again, it was a whole bunch of IT professionals that were coming to the seminar. And in advance, in preparation of the phishing seminar, they ran a phishing exercise.
Pen test, yeah.
It was something like 25% of the people that were attending the phishing seminar provided up their sensitive data as part of this phishing exercise. So it really comes down to training. And, you know, if you're an organization out there and your company is relying on your annual 2-hour, 3-hour end of year training, that's just not enough. You need to be, you know, a friend of mine said, you know, I've got young children, and you've got children as well. And they all said to me, it's not what you tell your kids, it's how often you tell them. And security training is exactly the same. It's about repetition and doing it often. Better to train your organization, you know, for 10 minutes every month than for 2 hours a year.
I keep thinking of the Black Hat Conference, how many of those reporters leave their smartphone and notebook up in their hotel room, and they're not going to go down there because they're going to be attacked, and and maybe they're not complying with some of the things they've written about.
Absolutely. I mean, because it's not easy. I mean, it's easy to say that you want to do these things, but it does take effort, it does take discipline. I come back to the analogy with fitness, right? We all want to be a little bit fitter, but are we willing to go out there and do the miles? Are we willing to go to the gym? We know we should, but again, it still takes that level of effort to do it.
Interesting. I read a study where they actually paid people to go to the gym, and they just took like $50 or $60, and they stopped going after 2 weeks. So even if you paid someone to go to the gym, they wouldn't go. So maybe applying to cybersecurity, maybe if we paid you, Grant, to change your passwords every 6 months, I don't even know if that would even motivate you to do it.
No, but I think what we need to do is, and you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, how much regulation there should or shouldn't be. You know, we're big advocates that we think the government should probably become more involved in this process, less in the punitive side. For one of the first things that government I think could do in this space is, you know, they could have a single entity that's responsible for this. We mentioned earlier on with Office for Civil Rights responsible for health information. You've got FTC responsible for privacy of information. You've got various different organizations, FDA managing medical device information that we talked about earlier on. And so it becomes very confusing, complicated. There is no single organization within government that's responsible for managing this. And I think doing that would make a big difference. But also, you know, it shouldn't just be punitive. You know, why are we not today offering tax credits for security training? Why are we not offering tax credits for organizations to invest more in security? If we genuinely believe that this is, you know, today's major issue, then government has a role to play in that. And, you know, in my view is that the government could do a lot more today to encourage organizations to invest more in security.
Just a quick 30-second answer for you. Next 5 years, where do you see this all heading? You think there's going to be more and more attacks, and that's finally going to get someone's attention? And what do you think is going to happen the next 2 or 3 years, Grant?
Yeah, so for me, this is an arms race, right? I mean, you know, there's some studies showing right now, I think if I get these numbers correct, there's I think like 180,000 cybersecurity positions that are vacant today in the market. They predict that that's going to be, I went to something like, you know, 3 million by 2019 or something like that. And so, you know, this is an arms race. And, you know, each time that, you know, business, organization, government steps up their defense level, the cyber criminals are basically stepping up their act. And, you know, if you have a look at, I mentioned earlier on, some of the exploits that are happening today, they're not that sophisticated. So you can see that there's a lot of evolution and progress that are going to be made there. So, you know, in 5 years' time, we're still going to be having this conversation, I believe. We're still going to be seeing that organizations aren't doing enough, but we'll have progressed things to the point where, you know, the cyber criminals will be more sophisticated, but hopefully the defenses will be more sophisticated as well.
Great. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Grant Elliott, founder and CEO of Ostendio. Thank you, Grant.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner at the Oakmont Group. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Tech Talk.